everybody. This is Jane Espenson calling you on your special voicemail message line.
This is Ian Bailey, and I portray August W. Booth. I thought this was a good opportunity to express my gratitude to all the fans of Once Upon a Time. Each time I watch the show, I'm reminded of how we all are special and unique beings on this planet. And all we have to do to awaken to the life we want is remember how truly special we are, each and every one of us. Fans of Once know this. That's why I love them.
Or least.
You are tuned in to Hour One of Once Upon a Time Radio, a live interactive show where you, your voicemails, and emails are all part of the show. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the hit ABC drama Once Upon a Time. Your hosts are Jeff and Colleen Roney from Orange County, California. And now, on with the show.
What's up? What's up? Thanks for spending your Saturday evening with us. I think we're okay. Can you hear us okay?
Uh-huh. They can hear.
Okay. So we have a lot of information to cover, a lot of cool things to talk about. And so we're going to jump in. There's a bit of a comedy little thing I'm going to play. Anyhow, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But really, some exciting news since they did play the Star Wars theme in the last episode. J.J. Abrams is signed on to direct the next Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. So that's I'm happy, and that's all we'll really say. So
I think it's going to be great because it's J.J., and he's done a lot of really amazing stuff. So.
Yep, and the lens flare jokes are just beginning, and they will never end. So, I think, in a way, we've kind of made our peace with Dr. Frankenstein. Kind of explain how you feel now.
Well, okay, so, I still wish they hadn't gone Frankenstein with him, but at least I can reconcile with how they made it happen. It's not my favorite part of the show.
Okay.
But at least I'm okay with it now. I can at least sort of kind of reconcile it.
It's steps, you know?
Yeah,
everything's in steps.
Look, I liked this episode.
Right.
I'm not a fan of the plot point of him being Frankenstein, but I did like the episode quite a bit, actually. And I thought it was very stylized. I thought it was really cool. And they had some really good points in there and some really interesting little tidbits for us. So I was okay with the episode. I really liked the episode, and I kind of get where they're going with it. Still wish they kind of had gone a different route, but that's just
well, I think that there's a lot of different things in the show where some people either warm up to it or some people like certain things better than whatever. But that's what makes this show great, is that it's a lot of different things
right
here and there.
Right.
And if it was all things that I really love, certainly somebody out there would not like it. So
well,
anyway.
Of course. That's totally I'm right. with you. And again, it comes back to what I said. Okay, I'll grant them Frankenstein still in my mind doesn't fit, but at least they did a really good job with it. However, I hope they don't go a little nuts and bring in characters that really, truly just no possible stretch of the imagination would
fit
in.
Oh, I think they will. I think
probably,
they will. So
anyway.
That's why I'm buckling up. So during the beginning of the episode of In the Name of the Brother, there was a moment that I really started to think about something when Gold was trying to explain to Belle that magic wasn't scary. And she said, how did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Belle could be his next apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, no, she doesn't have magic, but I mean, at least somebody that he can create, it's a do-over. We kind of talked about it last time
yeah.
that he's going to do it right this time. And I was just thinking about someone who is scared of magic, he's going to make not scared and understand it in a different way. So anyway, that's what I meant. So
okay,
I'm going to read an email, and then we'll talk about some things about a green city and that kind of thing. So this email is from Genevieve, and it says, "Hi, Jeff and Colleen. I was thinking perhaps the reason that Dr. Frankenstein isn't in the book, but is in Storybrooke, is because he's also the Wizard of Oz." She says, "I know this theory has been touched on before, but I thought there were some glaringly obvious nods to this again during this week's episode. First, Victor's father bestowed a certificate to Victor and a watch to Gerhardt. Also, Gerhardt was wearing a medal on his uniform that was very, very similar to the one that the lion got from the wizard. Of course, the certificate and the watch reminded me of the diploma and the heart-shaped watch that the wizard gave to the Scarecrow and the Tin Man. Mm-hmm. Also, how when Rumpel showed up, he was in full color, and the Victor's world was in black and white. Mm-hmm. I felt like they were screaming, 'Wizard of Oz,' but maybe that was just because I was open to it. Thanks for the podcast, and thank you for the email." And I think you've hit on all the really big, you've hit on all the points.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, if they don't go Wizard of Oz with that, that'd be, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, Wizard of Oz, excuse me, there was a little hint of Wizard of Oz in the book. Flying Monkeys was one of the one of the pictures in the early episodes of Henry's book. So it'll be interesting to see how they're going to reconcile that.
And we've been kind of talking about hints for a long time. I remember when the Evil Queen destroyed the roof, it was this kind of swirling wind, and it was like a tornado and that kind of a thing. So there have been little hints here and there, the picture in the book of the monkeys. So it's not been totally out of
Kansas
left
life
field.
Is plate for August.
Right.
So yeah.
So but yeah, this time it was the black and white world and the full color world, just like Genevieve had mentioned. So yeah, the commission I would consider a diploma-ish document, giving someone a, you know, a paid position in the service. And the medal, Gerhardt's medal, was like the Cowardly Lion.
Right.
And the watch, you know, was like the heart-shaped clock to the Tin Man. But I don't know if you've really ever thought about it or noticed, but Henry has a lot of clocks in his room. And if you really kind of look through the episodes, there's a lot of clocks and time. Remember that episode when with the beanstalk and Hook was there, said we're slaves of time. They were watching the sundial with the stick in the ground.
Yeah.
So time is always kind of intermingled in what we're frozen in time.
It's very key to the story.
Yeah.
So absolutely. So,
and there's a lot of clocks showing up. And Neil actually is a collector too. There was clocks
the
and
watches.
Radios and so right.
I mean, I know he didn't collect those, although
He,
I guess
he obtained
you could call
them.
Thievery collecting
he
them.
He obtained
but,
them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was kind of fun. I was doing some research and watching a little bit of Wizard of Oz and such a cool movie. So the name Greg Mendel. I don't know if anyone has done any kind of digging or research, but I looked into the name. Gregor Mendel was an Austrian monk, discovered the basic principles of heredity through the experiments in his garden, the observations he made while growing peas in his monastery's garden became the foundation of modern genetics and the study of heredity.
Interesting.
So, you know, we could either be talking about the princess and the pea.
Right, which is when you said that to me earlier this week, my mind immediately went to Princess and the Pea.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see, is he really like an outsider, or could he actually be somebody who was in fairy tale world And because he somehow managed to get outside the curse, so to speak, he doesn't really remember his fairy tale world stuff.
And I don't, I haven't read all the emails, and I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but in our Facebook group, someone was thinking that maybe Cora was the her on the phone that kept trying to call him. And that would kind of be an interesting twist that Cora would kind of
it would be
cover herself and then an use a cell phone.
Well, sure, it would be real interesting. Although, does she even know what a cell phone is?
Well, and like
and that's
I
where
said,
you get into that whole, so, there's the debate you know, so it gets, it gets into messy territory, I think. But anyway.
So I looked up all the area codes that were on the list in the show when they were kind of, when Emma was scrolling through. And they were all Pennsylvania area codes. And what was interesting, whoever the person was that he was calling was in different, kept moving to different area codes in Pennsylvania. So,
yeah,
I don't know what that means, but anyhow. So another question I had was, where did the paramedics come from? Where, I mean,
the hospital.
Okay.
They were from the Sturbrook Hospital.
Okay. I mean, I'd never seen them before.
Well,
so
when have we needed to see them?
Okay. All right.
I'm just saying.
They're tweeting now, and they got a paramedics, and, you know, so interesting. So when I saw the shot of Dr. Whale hiding in that room drinking, he's always drinking. He when he hits a tough spot, he goes drinking, and he either drinks with Mary Margaret or he drinks in this room, I guess in the hospital. But when they showed through the slot in the door, it kind of looked like a cell to me.
Oh, right.
Just a thematic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, because that is very typical of cell doors.
Right. So it's like he's trapped and so given that.
But it's also
visual.
Very typical in hospitals too. Older hospitals, as far as I can recall. Anyway.
So Gerhardt, the youngest son, which is, you know, puts a lot more pressure on Victor, obviously, the older son, to do, you know, to be the best or whatever. The oldest always gets this, you know, I mean, the youngest is a baby, but the oldest always has this pressure. Like, you're my first son. You need to.
Yeah, but wasn't Victor the second son? Wasn't he younger?
No, not that I'm aware.
Really? Are you sure about that?
Well, and I wrote on my notes, Gerhardt, the youngest son. I rewatched it and go ahead. Check.
No, the only reason why I say that is because typically if the father bought the commission in the army is because he was buying it for the second son, not for the first. The first son was typically the one
Paige
that was
said Victor is the oldest.
Okay.
So
I just wanted to make sure because I didn't. It just seemed odd to me that dad had to buy a commission in the army for him. He should have just automatically been enlisted.
We'll get to that. I want to talk about that, too.
Okay.
So,
I'm just saying traditionally. So
I tried to look up Silver Cross, and I've heard it before. There is a Memorial Cross, which is a Canadian medal, which is often known as a Silver Cross. And it's awarded to the mother, widow, widower, or next of kin of any member of the Canadian Forces who loses his or her life in active service, including peacekeeping and other international operations. So there's that. There's another reference to a Silver Cross with a blue ribbon and emblems or brooches corresponding to them is awarded for gallantry in circumstances of considerable risk.
Okay.
So obviously we have a brave soldier.
Yes.
You know, some reason the Silver Cross was given to him. And at this point, we don't know why. It was really interesting that that Gerhardt was so humble.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, plus he has heart in his name. Also kind of, you know, another once-ification of a name. But he was very.
Once-ification?
Yeah. Write it down. I'm going to create a whole new dictionary.
Excellent.
I'm just going to keep, you know.
That's funny.
But But yeah, so the pressure on the oldest son, you know, the father, I mean, the only time we see him is dressed in his, you know, dress, you know, from his service with all his medals on there.
You're talking about Gerhard.
No, the father.
Oh, the father. Oh, okay. I misheard you because I thought you were talking about Gerhard. But anyway, okay, go ahead.
So the father, every time we see him, he's dressed in his dress.
Well,
blues,
okay.
Whatever it is.
But was the, I don't think that was military dress. I think that was him being, because if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he like a duke or a baron? If that was the case, that would be how he would dress.
I'm not aware of that. I mean,
I mean,
take a little Mr. Google. I'm not aware. So, but anyway, his passion was, you know, being in the armed service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he wanted for his son. And it's interesting to watch every time he looked at Gerhard, he smiled.
Mm-hmm.
And when he looked at Victor, he didn't smile.
No, right.
So just obviously a definite change in him. But
well, yeah. he clearly favored
sure.
Gerhard.
Mm-hmm.
Because Gerhard obviously followed in his footsteps where Victor was not interested.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yep. So, it just, you know, crazy coincidence, a silver cross, and we also have a werewolf. Anyway, just tossing that out there. And also, it was interesting that Victor said to Gerhard in response to the silver cross, well, that's your cross to bear. Ha ha ha. You know, so. So, yeah, and the father's name was Alphonse Frankenstein. And, so the watch came from the wife's father, and Alphonse said when they were married, it was her father's. She wanted to keep it in the family. And it reminded me of James's mother with the magical green ring. So is that kind of, this is
with
important.
The ring that
you need
Rumpel
to,
made magic?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, my question is, how did Alphonse's father-in-law get the watch? And is it magical in some way? It might not be, or it may just be
an heirloom.
Here's an heirloom.
Mm-hmm.
Pass it down.
Yeah.
But something that important may have some type of magical something.
Who knows?
So
maybe we'll find out.
It didn't block a bullet. I'll tell
nope.
you that much. It just,
nope.
The bullet grazed it and cracked it, and there you go. But Victor said, I remember about his mother wanting to keep the watch in the family. And so this whole idea of the importance of the family name, just very, I mean, we don't hear that much anymore. In certain cultures, a family name is important. And I think back in the day it was.
Oh, hugely important.
You know, I think, especially in America, in the 2000s, we're kind of all on our own, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, just my thought on that. I wonder, how did Alphonse get the idea to buy a commission for Victor? Because my thinking is Rumpelstiltskin's behind all of these things somehow.
That would have been a good practice back. That would have been a normal practice back then. But you're right. Who inspired him to do so?
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting to find out if it was Rumpelstiltskin who kind of encouraged that.
I mean, you know, and it sounds crazy, and people may say, Jeff, is, you know, Rumpelstiltskin everywhere? It's like, well, my big question
so far,
is,
yeah.
what is the time period of the Frankenstein storyline? What time is that? And it seems like that people can pop hither and yon any time they want to. Because, you know, again, I don't know if time is important in what we're talking about here. You know, Storybrooke is kind of timeless, or Fairy Tale Land is timeless, and they can kind of pop back and forth. I don't know how, maybe Jefferson's hat. I don't know how, but
yeah, they don't seem to be very concerned with time in Storybrooke. I mean, in Fairy Tale World. Now you got me doing it. in fairy tale world, there really doesn't seem to be a whole lot of concern about time so much until the curse, and then it's 28 years.
Mm-hmm. With the death and the not complete regeneration of Gerhardt, there is currently no hope at this point right now of carrying on the Frankenstein family name. So Bell went off, and I said, that's why Dr. Whale was a womanizer. Because he wants to carry on the family name his way.
Oh, interesting.
And
well, yeah, he'd have to have children in order to carry on the family name.
Right. And so, you know, maybe her, maybe Ruby in him.
He could theoretically
possibly
adopt, but anyway.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? And that would be the way to do it. But it seems like he was very lonely. Mm-hmm. He wanted, you know, somebody to share his life with. But yeah, I think he and Ruby could potentially work.
I really did love that.
They had pretty good chemistry.
I did love that conversation because, you know, and it sounds funny. You know, I'm a werewolf and you're Dr. Frankenstein. Ha ha ha. But I mean, who better to understand where you were coming from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is maybe, you know, one monster or, to someone who makes monsters. You know, and it sounds funny, but I mean, that's what I love about this show is these are, you know, for lack of a better term, real people, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we're getting into the emotions of these people and the lives of these people instead of something that we just read. You know, this is a monster, and you go, okay, monster's mean, walks around, whatever. But now we're getting into the why. So, anyway.
Yeah. And by the way, on Twitter, I just happened to check once or twice this week, and David Anders did say, somebody asked him if he'd be up for a, you know, a relationship between him and Dr. Whale and Ruby. He said, are you kidding me? Of course I'm on board with that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, who wouldn't want to be in a relationship with Megan?
Yes, yes. So let me, there's a email about womanizing. This is from Morgan Potter. Hey, Morgan. It says, hi, Jeff and Colleen, here from frigid Minnesota, and I'll bet it is very cold. Trying to stay warm up here. Average temps are about 10, or minus 10.
10 below, yeah.
So quite different from you guys, I'd imagine.
This week, yes. Last week before, it was pretty cold, so, but not that cold.
Yep. Still, it's nice to have some good television to cuddle up to on a Sunday night. Hoping this reaches you, as my last email didn't seem to make it in. This is a bit of a catch-up email since I was going to write in about the cricket game / The Outsider, but didn't have time, so here goes. Apologies in advance for the length. I'm really starting to enjoy the show again. So we're not the only ones that kind of have little lapses here. To be honest, I wasn't that thrilled with the first couple of episodes this season, but it seems to have gotten more on track of the season one, which I greatly appreciate. However, I must say I'm a bit appalled that the writers are still using the Henry is not your son line to Regina. I am no hardcore evil Regal, but I truly do love to hate Regina and think she is one of the best parts of the show. I am getting really tired of everyone saying Henry is solely Emma's child because honestly, he is not. Regina is the one who raised him from birth, and the one thing that has always really bugged me that no one ever seems to mention is why does Henry not want Regina to be his mother? Can someone please answer me this? Morgan is really having trouble.
Yes, she was a little upset there.
Yeah. If I was raised by a woman for 10 plus years, I would always view that woman as my mother. Even if I did happen to know the identity of my birth mother, the woman who raised me would always hold a special place in my heart. And honestly, Henry has never once showed any kind of care for Regina. He disobeys her at every turn and goes way out of his way to find a woman to defeat her. Did Regina do something specifically to hurt Henry? Why is he such an ungrateful little bugger? Poor Regina. Emma just saying he's my son is getting old.
He's so, my son.
Right.
You got to put some emphasis there because you're not coming across with the real frustration Miss Morgan deserves.
You know, and Morgan, makes a great point, and we've kind of discussed this before, is that, you know, a woman, a family that adopts a child is very important. They take on that role, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and they are the parents.
Right.
You know, and Regina does have full right to say, you've been a parent for 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and you're telling me?
Well, and yeah, here's the flip side too. What we don't know is how was their relationship before Henry got the book and put two and two together, because he may very well have been a very sweet, wonderful little boy, and he may have really cared for her and loved her and didn't have any concern about their relationship at all until he got the book and started piecing everything together. So that's why we don't know. We can only assume at this point that maybe he did, you know, have more concern for her and care for her more before the book. And then the book changed things because he recognized who she is.
Right.
So obviously he's trying to, you know, make things better between them now. But I think too, the other thing is let's just go down this path just cause I just want to go down it. So he gets the book, he sees who she is, and he knows that in order to fix everything, he's got to break the curse. What if his whole reason for trying to defeat her or break the curse was so that she could be released from her hatred and her anger? Do you know what I'm saying? Out of care and concern for her, make her a better person. I'm not saying that's where they're going with it, and I know that that, you know, may not fly real well with some of their evil regals, but what I'm saying is, you know, we don't know the whole story. We will find that out, I'm sure, at some point, but we don't know. But yeah, on the surface, what we do see is he's being a snot, that he doesn't want to, you know, have anything to do with her. But then again, look what she's kind of done.
Well,
and he knows that.
The only justification I might give are, from what I understand, children are rebellious. And they find, you know, it's sort of, to me, like a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have another parent, birth or not, you kind of play both sides to your own advantage.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that's what's going on here. But, you know, for sure, she should treat her a little nicer. I mean, obviously, you have to kind of build up emotion to kind of make a show.
Sure.
You know, where you feel something and you get upset. Anyway.
And so. let's face facts. I mean, real life, if somebody does you wrong or you perceive them to have done something very bad and horrible, awful, even if it's not to you, but people you care about, because he absolutely loves Mary Margaret and has always loved her. So, I mean, the fact is, when he figured out who his mother is, and then realizes that she's not actually his real mother, and then figures out what his mother did to, you know, Snow White.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to kind of, and the same thing with Emma. Everybody took Henry and August tried so desperately to get her to believe this stuff. So that's all she kind of knows of Regina. She doesn't know how Regina was when he was a baby or anything like that. So there's a lot of things that, you know, it's very hard to let go of. Once you have a perception of someone, it's very hard to let that go and change that.
I want to say one more thing. There's a lot more that we can discuss, and that's what's great about this show, is there's always more to really discuss. The one thing I'll say is this. If my child left me to go to some weird city with a credit card on a bus to go find possibly the mother, the restraint that Regina had when he got back, I commend her for that. I would be out of my gourd mind.
Yeah.
Where did he go? I don't know where he went. You know, they had to use Emma to kind of track down, you know, what happened.
Right.
You know, so we'll leave it at that, because I'm just like, I would have a weather balloon. I would have planes looking.
But remember, she can't leave, and she knows that.
Well, but I would be flipped out if my
She at that point in time, yeah, I'm sure she was very flipped. But at the same time, I think she was more worried that he was going to find out who she was.
Yeah.
And that Emma was going to find out who she and everyone else was. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. I mean, she was worried. Totally. I get that. When they returned. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, if it was me... I have guard dog, or I've
well, and especially a 10-year-old boy. I mean, anyway. It would be, yeah, it'd be really tough to deal with.
So, okay. I continue on. Sorry, Morgan, about the long, but it was good discussion. So, the next part, The Outsider. This was a fantastic and heart-wrenching episode for me because I'm a huge Deary and shipper of Rumbel. Rumpel and Bell can seriously not catch a break. Ain't that the truth? That was me. Just when you think things are getting better, boom, more memory loss. While I, like other red-blooded females, enjoy good looks and charm of Captain Hook, what he did was pretty unforgivable in my book, and I truly hope Rumple will get another go at him. Jumping over to In the Name of the Brother, how I think Belle will get her memories back is this. When she smashed the cup against the wall, sob, Rumple can't clean it up or take it away.
Didn't clean it up or take it away.
Right. He didn't. That's okay.
Right.
Good point. He left the shards laying on the ground. Now, what I think will happen in a couple of days, sitting in her hospital bed, Belle will really start to focus on those shattered bits, and maybe, just maybe, the charm Rumple put on the item will still be in place and help bring her memory back. Again, fingers crossed. That's a great point.
Well, and that was what I thought was interesting, is that he did leave it there. So either Belle will eventually go over there and pick it up, clean it up, or somebody else will. Not that I don't know what's going to happen with that, or if it's anything's going to happen, but...
I'm fairly certain the production team listens to every Once Upon a Time podcast. So I just want to say, hi, Once Upon a Time production team. Hello. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We love you and the show. All right. We will continue. On to Dr. Wales / Frankenstein. I'm one of the few and proud to say that I really enjoyed the Frankenstein story and especially love the black and white filming. And there's a few people in the chat room, so you could say, go Frankenstein. Okay. Very cool, true to the original film, that they based the character off. And I'm very glad that Henry himself said Frankenstein isn't a fairy tale, because it's not. I think by putting this line in, the writers cooled down a lot of negative viewer response. Right, Colleen? Okay. I think David Anders is doing a fantastic job, and I want to stop there and say, I always wanted him to do something, because he was always kind of not. He was very not. I mean, look, I enjoy the conversation he had with Mary Margaret over drinks. And, you know, when he turned around looking at Ruby, I mean, you know, that was a wonderful moment and all. But it was just like he didn't do anything. And I think that's what was frustrating, you know. Yeah. And so they were kind of playing with me, and they were going, well, just wait, Jeff, just wait, Jeff. Ah, Dr. Frankenstein. So I was like, oh, okay. Well,
oh, I do like David Anders. I think he's fantastic.
He's a great actor. This last episode, I really showed what he could do. I if I remember, people saying he was an Alias.
I believe
he was
a
bad guy.
He was a bad guy.
And
he's played bad guy.
I don't remember
bad guy in a
seeing
few
him.
Shows.
And I've got Alias DVDs. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will continue. David Anders is doing a fantastic job with the character, even though he does the accent in his world. I really like it and think it adds a side of his character, just like Rumple. Now, I might have figured out why he was portrayed as such a womanizer in season one. Frankenstein is set in Victorian era. A time where money could buy you anything. Young Dr. Frankenstein came from a very rich family. And it could be possible that the writers were thinking of portraying him as a wealthy, cocky playboy type, like Dorian Gray. I don't know that story. You probably do.
Actually, I don't know Dorian Gray. I've heard of it, but I don't know the story itself.
I'll have to check into that. I know that it was in a U2 song. I'm really geeking out. I'm sorry. Okay. Think Dorian Gray, which was written around the same time period. This is what makes Dr. Whale being Frankenstein a bit more understandable to me. While it wasn't necessarily mentioned in the original story, it could be assumed from the era and social standing of those times. Hope this helps out a bit. I still think he will turn out to be the Wizard of Oz, as well as Dr. Frankenstein. There's a lot of people in that mm-hmm. group. Mm-hmm. I am in that group as
yep.
well.
Yep, yep.
There's so much Oz, it's just kooky, crazy. So, and I fully shipped Frankenwolf or Red Whale, whatever the name for Ruby and Dr. Whale is. There's another one that I'd really rather not say on the podcast, but it's kind of chuckly funny, but I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, let's not say
it. It's on Twitter. I creepily like them together. And one final note, I promise, where is August? That poor boy, I always had hoped that he and Emma would get together. Obviously not now, with both Neil, who I'm 98% sure is Bay, and Hook fighting for her attention. I wouldn't be surprised if when Rumpel and Emma set out to find Bay, Neil, that they find August trying to return him to Emma now the curse is broken. As always, I can't wait to hear your thoughts and the rest of the show. Big love to all the teams. Morgan, thank you so much, Morgan. That was a great email.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we have other great emails coming.
Okay, a little side note. If, in fact, Neil turns out to be Bay and Rumpel turns out to be Regina's father, because that seems to be a popular theory as well,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be one messed up family tree for Henry.
Right. And I think people kind of saw that a long way back, like, wow, that's kind of crazy.
Explain that one.
Right. Thanksgiving is going to be wild.
Little bit.
You know. So.
Little bit.
Okay. I'm going to play the comedy bit. There was a song I heard that annoyed me. And then I started thinking, I said, I need to make fun of this song, and I wonder who could rap it. And I say the only voice that I really could do that's somewhat once-ish is Rumpelstiltskin. And I don't even really do Rumpelstiltskin all that well. So this is a voice that sounds nothing like Rumpelstiltskin, though I'm going to try to do this voice for you. And so I recorded this little parody rap song. Mm-hmm. And it's very short, so if it's bad, it won't. This is a short pain if you don't like it. So here we go.
What? Some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is freaking awesome, dearie.
Now, okay. Now, I will tell you, the original version of that song is not kid friendly.
Macklemore's thrift shop. Yeah, no, it is so not kid friendly at all.
Listen to me. Please don't send your kids and say, oh, Jeff made fun of this song. You got to go listen to the original. And I am not saying that at all, because I cleaned it up quite a bit. There's all kinds of things in there. And I just did a little bit. So,
yes. Well,
anyway,
I have to say that my favorite part was that was freaking awesome, dearie.
And that was one of the things I had to kind of correct. Because... Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
I read through the lyrics. I'm going, wow, that's, oh, wow, okay. Gee, that's something else.
That's fantastic.
And probably some of the things I said mean, like, nasty bad things or something.
Well,
so,
I don't know.
I don't even know.
Just, yeah.
So, anyway, that's what you do with recording equipment in about 20 minutes of spare time.
You know who's going to miss this? Who's not here tonight? And you know what she's going to say about it?
What?
Pimp with a limp.
Right. She's not in the chat room?
Nope.
Now, I
had words with her.
I had expected her about 2 seconds into that first part to go, thrift shop. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
So, anyway. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, Ima, that was for you. All right. So, we'll continue on. Let's read a couple of more emails. We're coming up on almost 15 minutes to the end of hour one. So... This is from Holly from Wisconsin. Hey, Jeff and Colleen, talk about a roller coaster of an episode. Everyone did a fantastic job in this episode in the acting department. I was so chuckling when Emma said the Dead Man of the Year award would be going to Hook. And that's another thing it reminded me of was Peter being chained up.
Peter?
Remember Peter, Ruby's boyfriend?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the same thing with Hook. You know, remember Emma said, you know, look, Gold's out, walking around, yeah. Got power, magic.
Yeah.
And he, you know, the Dark One.
Right.
And you're chained to this bed.
Yep.
So I was, anyway, that was another little connection there. So.
All right.
All right. I continue. I think he's living on borrowed time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Hook's pretty popular,
and
I think they'll keep him around.
Wait. Before you go on, we need to say happy birthday to Colin O'Donohue, who plays Hook,
yes.
Because it is his birthday today.
Happy birthday, Colin.
Oh, yeah. Hope it's a really happy one.
I think there's a line of people that want to jump out of your cake, Colin.
Happy birthday.
All right.
Because he's beautiful.
Top of the morning. That's all I know.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, he certainly has taken a shine to Emma. Well,
he has.
Yeah. So.
She's really pretty.
She is.
She's pretty fierce and she's tough. She's just the kind of woman a pirate would like to have.
Right.
Just throwing that out there.
Okay. I will continue. I really felt bad for Gold in this episode. His scene with Whale really showed it. He was trying to hold himself together and not completely break down with what happened to Belle. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it was one of the lowest points ever for Mr. Gold, period.
Dude, it was right up there with when Bay went through the thing, in my opinion, the way he just was so traumatized by that.
Yeah.
It was very, very sad.
I think another reason why Gold said no to helping heal the stranger was that he knew that the driver had seen him with the fireball in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, true. Mm-hmm. And plus, you know, I think he's leery. I think he's so out of sorts that he just doesn't know who to trust. And so, you know, with all this other stuff going on, the only thing he's thinking about now is he can leave and he's going to go get Bay. That's it. No one else really matters.
Well,
except for Emma.
I think Belle, he didn't want to heal this man because he's just so traumatized and so upset about Belle that he's not in a charitable mood. And again, he didn't have the time. That was the other thing. He knows he's got a very short window before his fury is unleashed.
Right.
And so I think he was worried that he didn't have enough time to think through the deal. That's the other thing. Because you know he wouldn't just do it for free. And they even mentioned that. Just out of the kindness of your heart. It's like, no, how about no? I'm not going to do it.
Right.
Because, again, he would have wanted to bargain for something. That's his way.
Yep.
He's upset about Belle. He's also losing time. I think he feels like he's losing time. So, anyway.
Interesting choice of words. The rest of the email. The scene when Gold gives Belle the chipped cup and her not believing a word that he's saying, and her getting more and more agitated, I kind of see it coming that she was going to throw the cup, really hoping that there will be a way for Belle to get her memories back. The scene in the pawn shop between Cora and Gold was a little disturbing. Yes, I'm talking about the kiss. I'm sure there is some backstory there. Gold was not a willing participant in that kiss at all. I'm thinking that if he had his way, he would have turned her into something. I was so duped when Henry went to go see Regina. Mm-hmm. When he turned into Cora, I was greatly surprised. I really loved the decorations that were in the heart vault. So very pretty and so Regina. Cora, and you're right, I watched it again, and mm-hmm. I did see all the dresses there. So... and we'll talk, it's in my notes, so we'll talk about the room in a bit.
Okay.
Cora's really winning the Baddie of the Year and not Mother of the Year award in my book. I'm really beginning to think that Cora is not going to be easily redeemed, or let's face it, that she's going to want Eden to be redeemed. I know she told Regina that she would change to rebuild her relationship with her, mm-hmm. but I really think she was just saying that to get what she wants, which is a very Rumpel thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or Gold pre-Belle.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yep. Belle lately. Because when she first got there, he was just, yeah, you told me I couldn't kill her, but you didn't say the Wraith couldn't kill her. Ha-ha! Gotcha!
Old habits die hard, though, right. Like I said before.
Yep. So the scene that happened at Casa de Charming with Gold, I love the way she... Holly, you're a great writer. It's funny. So Casa de Charming with Gold, and the Charming family was really charged. You could feel the pain, the anger radiating off Gold. David moving forward a bit to try and protect Emma, and then stopping when Gold mentioned that he had a son that needed finding. That stopped him. I'm thinking that David's starting to put some of the pieces together as to why Gold Rumpel has been acting and doing some of the things that he's done. I want to stop there for just a second. You know what makes this really a brilliant show is that, yes, we are interested in what happens next.
Right.
But we are probably just as interested, maybe more interested, at what happened before.
Right.
That's a brilliant show.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brilliant. Is that we're so invested in these characters that, sure, we want to know what happens next. But we're so focused on, how did they get this way?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great character.
Totally.
That is so hard to do. Because normally people are like, well, whatever. But this is, anyway, so great job. Plus, Gold even admits that he needs to get out of town before he kills Hook. That's really saying a lot coming from him. And that he's still trying to prove himself to Belle and to honor her wishes before the incident at the town line happened. I really don't think that Rumpel needed to give the warning to the Charmings that if anything happened to Belle, that he would kill them. I think they all realize how much she means to him from how he was acting when they were all in the hospital waiting on the news of the visitor and Hook. Something tells me that things in Storybrooke are going to get a lot more interesting now that we know the visitor lied to Emma when he said he was texting. So that brings to question, did Emma's power fail her? And I believe they did. I mean, can't you see that? If you have the special power of knowing when someone's lying?
I know everyone said that that's her special power, but I still think that was her way of just kind of... It's what you say to a kid. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We've had this conversation before.
Yeah.
I don't think she really has the actual superpower of being able to detect when people are lying. I think she reads people really well.
Yeah.
But not all the time, obviously, because if she had read people really well, I think she wouldn't have mistaken his lie for the, you know, him being truthful, because he wasn't.
I have a superpower of me washing dishes and me not even being in the kitchen. Oh, it's not working now. But anyway, all right. Okay.
What?
So I'm just joking.
Okay.
All right. did Emma's power fail her, or can her truth-telling power only work on those that are Storybrooke residents? And that's another... that could be. Here's another thought to ponder. Do you think the girlfriend, wife, significant other of the stranger that crashed into town is going to believe a word that they are telling them over the phone, or are they going to chalk it up to heavy pain medication and a good bump on the noggin? And that's a great point.
Depends on who the her is.
Right.
We don't know who the her is. The fact that they even put her as the name, people don't do that.
Right.
If you put in there your wife, mm-hmm. you don't say her, you say wife. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to use the person's real name, you make up a name or you have a nickname. when you put my name in the phone, do you have it in there as my real name? If you don't, you probably have it in there as Saweetie.
Right.
You don't put it in as her.
And the love of my life.
Oh, you're such a funny little pipper. But do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So who is her? Is her initials?
I view as the one who completes me.
Okay, but there's very obviously something right, significant about using the name her.
Yes.
It just seemed very odd to me that that was the name he would choose, especially if it's a significant other.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly, now, unless it's a boss that he doesn't like, but even then, that's really, I'm telling you, I think her is...
The big question is, why is she moving?
She who?
I think she doesn't want to be discovered.
She who?
Who he keeps calling.
Oh, he wasn't calling her.
There was a list of phone numbers.
Yes.
No. He was calling her.
No, he called him repeatedly.
There were numbers listed on that phone when she was flipping through the screens of Pennsylvania phone numbers. So
they were incoming calls from her. She even said that this person really wants to get a hold of him.
Okay. Then she was in different counties for all the calls. So she's moving around. And the question is, who called that had the Star Wars ringtone?
I don't know.
Okay. So there's more than one person that was calling him.
Sure, probably, because that's normal real life.
All right. So questions. Time to wrap this up. Glad there's only going to be a short hiatus this time around. Looking forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode. Big love to everyone. Holly from Wisconsin. Thank you so much, Holly. That was a great email. And with that, we end hour one.
All right.
Thank you so much for finding us, joining us in the chat room, downloading, however you listen to us. We thank you for that. And I want to send big love out to everybody. Big love is lots of love, too much to keep. So you got to keep passing it on. Whatever that means to you, that's what you should do. So have a great weekend. And we will not be live. We will not have a live show next week or the week after. So we're going to take a little break and
stick around for the second half.
Stick around for hour two, which starts in just a bit.
Hi there. There are a number of ways that you can stay connected and interact with the show. Our main website address is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our Twitter name is OUAT Podcast. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/OUAT Podcast. Our email address is feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. And the address to our forum is forum.onceuponatimepodcast.com. Our blog web address is aclosserlookouat.ronyzone.com. And our voicemail line phone number is 657-333-0626. Thank you for listening, connecting, and interacting with us. Now, back to the show. Thank you for being a part of this podcast. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. This is Wayne Henderson, the voice of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. And if you want to know more about how my voice acting services might work for you, check out MediaVoiceOvers.com. And now, all of us here at Roni's Own Media and MediaVoiceOvers.com look forward to sharing the love and enjoyment of the Once Upon a Time TV show next time. Take care.